Now back to Cofield and Company, live from the Battle Born Broadcast Center on ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, let's bring in Miles Simmons for Pro Football Talk. Alex White, Cofield, ESPN Las Vegas. Miles, what's up, buddy?
Oh, not too much. Happy holidays, guys.
Happy holidays. How much do you do it up for the holidays? Do you go crazy with the gifts? Because I find myself, budget-wise, I don't know what I've spent, I don't know what I've bought, and I just keep buying.
Yeah, those are January problems, right? You know, yeah. I mean, they could even be February problems, depending on when your credit card statement comes out. So, you know, I it's kind of the way I approach it. I try not to go too crazy. I'm lucky in that, like, there's not too many people in my nuclear family that I got to buy gifts for. Although I do have, like, this is the first year I'm going through Christmas with, like, a girlfriend, and we're going to visit her family, so, like, you got to buy now Ooh. Gifts for the family. Yeah, it's a
not
whole
your,
thing.
Not
it's
your
whole
responsibility,
thing.
Really.
I mean, kind of. It's kind of mine. Like, we bought books for parents. I picked out some books. So, you know, I don't know. We'll see how it goes, man. We'll see how it goes. Maybe I won't have a girlfriend in January.
That, right? This is the final straw. You know, you've been blowing it the whole time. You blew the holidays, jerk.
Yeah, yeah, we'll see. We'll
Miles Simmons, PFT, Pro Football Talk, is here with us. I'm not sure what's going on down in Miami. I think Mike McDaniel's lying. Quinn Ewers doesn't not give them the best chance to win, but this is what you do when there's not much to play for. Pulling the plug on Tua is the right thing, and I will admit, you and I have gone round and round on Tua. I've been a Tua supporter. That was ugly. It's getting worse and worse. They're in trouble with this deal, man. Big trouble.
Yeah, they are. And, I mean, yeah, I've made my feelings on Tua Tagovailoa quite clear. I do feel a little bit vindicated today over the last couple of days. But, you know, I don't need to pat myself on the back or take a victory lap or anything like that. You know, somebody else might do that for me. But I think the biggest thing with the Dolphins right now is you want to see what you have in some ways with Quinn Ewers. And this is a quarterback-friendly system. Obviously, you're not playing with Tyreek Hill because he's out right now. But still, you've got talented enough players at skill positions, guys like a Darren Waller or Jaylen Waddle, that you can at least get a little bit of a gauge on what the quarterback can do. And so, I mean, I don't know if Quinn Ewers is going to be the solution for the Miami Dolphins. I would suspect that he's not. But if he looks competent and does well enough, then there's a world in which, A, Mike McDaniel is brought back as head coach, and B, you know, Quinn Ewers is maybe that bridge solution, so that if he's not the long-term guy in Miami, then maybe he can help them, you know, tread water enough until they can bring that person in. And who knows who that person might be. But yeah, I mean, I'm not surprised at this point that this is what the Dolphins are going to do, given that Tagovailoa hasn't been very good for a long time, in my opinion.
What's your opinion on Mike McDaniel moving forward? And then I think the job market is fascinating. Almost every list, and these are very incomplete, almost every list I've seen for potential hot candidates around the NFL are more from the defensive side of the ball.
Well, yeah, and it's not really a particularly great time, I think, if you need a younger offensive mind who's up and coming and that. Like, a lot of those are kind of gone because they came from the Shanahans of the world and the McVays of the world, right? So, you know, you had that Washington staff and obviously that dovetailed and da-da-da-da-da. And, like, we now see McVay, LaFleur, obviously Shanahan, but then it spreads even further to McDaniel, who we were just talking about, Liam Cohen, like, I mean, there's all kinds of younger offensive minds that are kind of that tree and of that mold. But there's the cupboard's getting a little bit bare. And so at this point, it's weird because you kind of have a generation of coaches that is about cycled out. And so you now kind of need to start getting more guys in it. And I don't necessarily know who the most attractive of these young, you know, quote-unquote hot assistants would be. I mean, like, you saw Brian Callahan flame out very quickly with the Tennessee Titans, right? I mean, Mike Kafka, if things had gone well with Brian Daboll with the Giants this year, might have been one of those names. They didn't. I mean, do you go with a retread, somebody like a Matt Nagy? Do you hit up Doug Peterson if you want somebody as an offensive mind? Exactly. That's what I'm saying. It's not great out there. You know, if Chip Kelly had done well with the Raiders. He's another one that might have been able to get himself a call. So, you know, Jesse Minner is somebody with the Chargers that makes sense to me as somebody that could be a head coaching candidate. But other than that, I mean, it's not like, wow, we're seeing all these guys and it's like, oh, where's the hot candidate? Where are they going to go? There's no Mike Vrabel in this cycle, right? There's no Sean Payton in this upcoming cycle either. So that's why I think you see more college guys getting mentioned, like a Marcus Freeman, right? Like that makes sense to me just based on where things are right now with head coaching candidates.
Quinn Ewers in for the Dolphins. I think we know what they're doing. Geno Smith could be back for the Raiders. Do they know what they're doing?
I don't think it matters what the Raiders do at this point. I mean, like, I mean, it's ugly, man. 75 yards in a game in the year of our Lord 2025. I don't care who you're playing. Like, that is awful. And the fact that it's happened twice now this year that the Raiders have finished with under 100 total yards in a single game, that is historically bad stuff. And, you know, I have said this, I'm sure, on this show, that I've been surprised how bad the Raiders have been under Pete Carroll. I mean, I think he is pretty shell-shocked by it. At least he kind of seems like it. Because you don't expect this from Pete Carroll. But, I mean, this has been a disaster for the Raiders this year. And you have to do something differently next year. There's nothing that you can do to solve this at this point if you're the Las Vegas Raiders now. There's not. So if Geno can play, might as well play him. You know, he's at least playing for a head coach who still believes in him. But I don't know what else there is to salvage right now for the Las Vegas Raiders in 2025.
I'm enjoying the angle that Florio is playing out, and I think it's just begun. The angle is Tom Brady running this franchise? If he is, and there's a new regime coming in, they have to ask, is Tom Brady running the franchise? And if he is, he needs to make a full commitment.
Yeah.
And he can't be doing TV. So where are you on this? Brady is or isn't, and then Brady's got to do one or the other.
I mean, I've long thought that Brady should do one or the other. I think it's opportunity cost, right? And there are choices that we make in life, and, you know, we don't always get to do everything we want to do. It's just not necessarily possible because we can't split ourselves in half. You know, so if Tom Brady wants to be a great broadcaster, and I've said this plenty of times, you know, he really shouldn't be a team owner. And if he wants to be a great team owner, then he can't be a broadcaster because he cannot devote his full and undivided attention to bettering the Las Vegas Raiders. So he should be all in or all out, to, you know, quote Mike Mayock when he was talking about Antonio Brown back in 2019. Like, that's, I understand why Tom Brady wants to do this and split himself. But if he is going to try to exert influence, and I shouldn't even say try, if he's going to exert the influence over the franchise and try to run things, then he needs to run things. And I think that there's an argument that Tom Brady could be very good at that job. But and I also think that he's gotten a lot better as a broadcaster this year. I've enjoyed Tom Brady the last few times I've watched his games. But you can't do both of these things and be great at both of these things because you are serving two very, very separate objectives and they don't coincide with one another. They can't mesh.
Miles, we've already talked about tomorrow night's game, huge Thursday night game between the Rams and the Seahawks, especially for that division and potentially the NFC one seed. What do you think? Rams won the first one 21-19. You think they sweep them or you think the Seahawks get this one?
I kind of think that the Seahawks are going to get this one. It's not good for the Rams. Obviously, the Devontae Adams, you know, has a hamstring issue. He's doubtful for tomorrow night's game officially. And when they're doubtful, that usually does mean that they're going to be out. And also, you know, I don't know if y'all saw that there's some plane issues that have been going on with the Rams. So one of their flights, whatever plane they were supposed to take as a team had a mechanical issue, so it didn't take off when it was supposed to, maybe about an hour and a half ago, and now they're going to take off with the players and coaches at 5:25 Pacific, and then the rest of the staff is going to fly up separately somehow, some way, I guess. I don't know. But the interesting thing for the Seahawks is how is Sam Darnold going to perform? Because he was bad against the Rams in that first game, and yet Seattle still had a chance to win despite Sam Darnold throwing four picks. And Sam Darnold has not performed well against the Rams in his last three appearances. I had two with the Vikings last year, one on Thursday night, and then obviously the playoff game in January that was played in Arizona because of the fires that were out here. And then this year, you know, when they were playing in Los Angeles. So I'm interested to see how Sam Darnold does, because if Sam Darnold plays a clean game and the Rams are missing Davante Adams and, you know, they can't necessarily get things going as well as they would like to, then Seattle should win this. And that will be really interesting because, you know, that opens the door really for San Francisco to get in potentially on the number one seat because they play Seattle at the end of the season. And so, you know, it's going to become a lot more topsy-turvy if the Rams do not come out and take care of business. And we don't know. I mean, you know, it's short week. You're playing a divisional opponent. It's going to be a Thursday night. This honestly has to be one of the best late season Thursday night games in recent memory. And I feel like we're not talking about it enough. I'm really jazzed up for this one.
I agree. And then we've got a really good game on Saturday. Let's just go into the north here in the NFC with Green Bay and Chicago. But from a betting standpoint, everybody loves the points here with the Bears. Do you agree with that?
Yeah, I mean, I understand why. You know, when Micah Parsons goes out, it does change a lot of what the Green Bay Packers are going to be able to do defensively. You know, Christian Watson looks like he might be able to play this week despite going to the ER. Apparently, they checked for dislocated ribs, and he didn't have any, so he's now practicing. He was limited today. Josh Jacobs also still dealing with the knee, so there are some things working against the Packers that really are not working against the Bears, who effectively had a bye week last week. You know, they're just playing the Browns, right? Oh, my gosh. Oh, Myles Garrett got a sack and a half. Oh, and, you know, you get Caleb Williams basically reenacting, you know, Montana to Clark. So I think that there are a lot of things that are working in the Bears' favor, and we'll see. But, you know, Jordan Love tends to play well when the stakes are pretty high. And so I like the Packers, you know, like money line wise, but I understand why people want to take the Bears to the points.
Do you think in the other Saturday game that the Eagles can actually deal with prosperity? They get the commies twice in the last 3 weeks. Can they win out here, at least beat the Commanders both times?
They should be able to beat the Commanders. I mean, the Marcus Mariota is one of those quarterbacks that I kind of feel like was the same with Tua Tagovailoa. Like, I don't need to see him play ever again, man. Like, Marcus Mariota's fine. Like, God love him. Second overall pick once upon a time and, like, you know, threw a pass to himself in a playoff game and helped beat the Chiefs. But, like, he's just one of those quarterbacks that I just watched and I'm just like, oh, man. But the Eagles are interesting because they had their homecoming game last week, right, against the Raiders. Like, and that was even more of a practice than playing the Browns. And so now, can you sustain that, right, against a divisional opponent that's going to come after you because they know you? I think the Eagles should be able to get this done and probably get it done pretty comfortably. But I would not be surprised if, especially in like a national TV window, there might be some uncomfortable moments and maybe a sideline interaction or two that gets a little bit magnified.
2 minutes left, two important issues, very important issues to close out on. One, what is your Chiefs offseason plan at quarterback with Pat Mahomes down for maybe, you know, obviously it's going to be months and months, but could be into week 8 of next season. What do you do?
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's just blind optimism or whatever, but I don't think Patrick Mahomes is going to miss any of next season. I mean, remember when Joe Burrow went down with the knee? I mean, it was similar, right? Not necessarily exactly the same time, a couple weeks before when Burrow did it, because it was in late November, but Burrow was ready for the start of the season. I anticipate something similar with Patrick Mahomes. What I would do, I would just bring back Gardner Minshew. I think he's one of the better backup quarterbacks in the National Football League anyway. So I don't see why they shouldn't just run that kind of quarterback room back for next year. And if it so happens that Minshew needs to start the first couple games, then I think they'll be okay.
Wow. This is the issue we need to tackle.
Okay.
Tweet: I really enjoy California, but the widespread toleration of dogs in grocery stores is backwards and barbaric. I have a couple of working cats outside that we feed, some ferals. I'm ready to throw them on a leash and bring them to the grocery store. Let's go.
No, No.
This is, I agree. It's out. Of course it's worse. That's my point. It's out of control with the dogs.
Oh, my God.
My food.
Thank you. Like, it's food. It's produce. And I don't understand why people just can't look at a situation and say, is this a good idea or not? Do I want hair in my food that is not even human hair? It's animal hair. That they've been licking. All because they lick themselves. That's all they do. Like, I just want people to think past, like, step one, you know? But they can't do it. And it's even worse now that we got all this different AI stuff and ChatGPT. I saw a billboard today for ChatGPT. Like, really? We need a billboard for that? I guess it takes less energy than, you know, it does to search stuff and create images. But my gosh, like, our brains are going to go to rot. And I think it starts with stuff like, you know, like bringing dogs into grocery stores, because we used to have some couth as a society, and for some reason we just don't anymore. I don't know.
Have we touched on this one? The other movement online, I actually disagree with this one, is people are getting very angry that people aren't getting dressed properly to go to the airport and wearing slippers and sweatpants.
I mean, okay, I don't like wearing pajamas on the plane. Yeah. Like, I think that we can, there's a step between, right, like, oh, man, we have to get dressed up like it's like it's the 1950s, hey, and I'm flying from JFK to LAX. Like, no, like you're not doing that. But, like, I also don't really believe in wearing pajamas out of the house. So I usually wear joggers and a hoodie. Like, and I see nothing wrong with that because a lot of the time I'm flying multiple hours. I like to be a little bit comfortable. I think that's good. I think I look respectable. But, yeah, there's... You don't, why would you need to dress up to go on a plane? Because you're going to sit in an uncomfortable tin can? That doesn't make any sense to me. But we don't need to wear pajamas outside of the house, though. Or slippers.
Read his stories on Pro Football Talk. Follow him up on Twitter at Miles A. Simmons. Miles, appreciate it. Thanks for being patient at the beginning of the spot. We'll talk to you, buddy.
All right. Take care, guys. Happy holidays.
Happy holidays. Alex White, Cofield, we're back in a few. We're going to talk to Michael Felder in less than 10. He's our college football insiders. We'll further break down the CFP and see what he wants to do with some of these big games in the college football playoff. Give me your take on this push that Tom Brady kind of needs to make a decision on whether he's going to be the decision maker for the Raiders or not. Does he need to dump TV? Because there's a game being played here where we don't really know how involved he is. And RJ Clifford was on yesterday from the Autumn Windbags, and he was saying, believe me, if the Raiders were having some monumental season and were 12-2 right now, I bet you Brady would be getting some credit and taking it.
Yeah, I could see that. I don't know. It's such a tough topic because I don't want to say can't do broadcasting because, I mean, maybe he doesn't do that for very long. And, you know, buying into the Raiders is a long-term thing. But right now, I mean, this is the time that he should be doing the analyst stuff. So I understand everybody's argument that he has to pick, but I don't know. It's tough.
Yeah, this is another one of those stories. I mean, I have opinions, but I'm not going full bore because I don't know what his role is. So, but I like that Mike Florio's pushing the issue for a coach coming in. If Pete Carroll is relieved of his duties, for a coach coming in, they've got to ask these questions like, who am I answering to? Who has ultimate personnel power? How involved is Tom Brady? How involved is MD? How much power does the GM have?
Can I just throw in one thing? Yeah. We should not be surprised if Pete Carroll is the head coach again next year, right? Because isn't there a ton of... There's like two or three coaches being paid right now. It'd be a very tough spot to put them in, to let him go after 1 year, and it might just be a true building year with Pete Carroll next year, right? Where they are on the same page.
Is he in for a build, though? Because I think the build should have started the middle of this year, and it doesn't seem like he wanted in there. And, you know, Tyler Lockett was signed and is playing and getting targeted, and Jack Besh wasn't playing and is finally playing. It's a weird deal.
Yeah.
College football. We got the college football playoffs. So your best play is what? What do you like the most?
That's a great question.
Alabama, Oklahoma, Miami, Texas A&M, JMU, Oregon, Tulane, Ole Miss.
I like under in the Alabama and Oklahoma game. That is probably my best. I think both teams are better defensively. I know Oklahoma is for sure. I think they can slow down Alabama's offense too, and probably a feeling out in that first half. But I do think I like Oklahoma. You didn't like that too much. You think they're going to go full force, but
oh no, I was thinking of another game. Keep going.
That's it.
I was thinking of the Miami Texas A&M game, and I think you guys talked me into Texas A&M. Although the one thing, like, I didn't love the way Texas A&M played against Texas. Obviously, the South Carolina game for the Aggies was terrible. Mm-hmm. I've had some worries about Marcel Reed, but I think the home environment's going to be raucous. Although it's also weird. Yeah. I read a story today with Mike Elko, like, basically having to tell the fans there, hey, let go of the past and have fun. Enjoy this. This is a great ride. Stop looking at us with cynicism and hesitance because, you know, things haven't worked out in the past. Like, this is a great thing. Come out and celebrate. We can get, you know, 105,000 plus at this game. So I think they're going to have a big crowd. And I don't know. Carson Beck scares me.
Me too.
And Cristobal. Listen, at some point, a coach does come through in big games, you know. Like, maybe not James Franklin, but eventually he will.
And, I mean, the big thing is those two games that Miami dropped, I think Texas A&M can look similar to what SMU and Louisville did and kind of watch that. And then who did they really beat up on down the stretch? Syracuse. And
yeah, Beck had 11 touchdowns and one interception. Then I looked at quality of opponents. I was like, ooh, okay, this wasn't the greatest slate
right.
to close out the regular season. And they avoided the championship game, which could have done them in. Sometimes that's a great thing.
Yeah.
Not having that extra game and the wear and tear on the team. Coming up, let's talk to Mike Felder from Learfield and College Sports Now. He's up on Twitter at In the Bleachers. He also can be found with his newsletter. Puts it up there 4 or 5 days a week at itsfelder.substack.com.
Now back to Cofield and Company on ESPN Las Vegas.
Back here on this Wednesday, our college football insider, Michael Felder, is with us. Let's do a little wrap of the last week, and then we'll start looking ahead to these four games in the college football playoff. First of all, your thoughts on Fernando Mendoza winning the Heisman, and I really like the fact that he shouted out Latino players. I don't know how many Latino players you played with, some whatever it was, 15-plus years ago at North Carolina.
Don't date me.
Well, it's a growing segment in college football, I think very underappreciated, and
yes.
At the top of the Heisman list was Mendoza and Apavia.
And yeah, Apavia and Mendoza, absolutely. I played with a handful of guys in high school specifically. You know who I played with? I played with a guy that was a member of the Lumbee Native American tribe, actually. He's from Lumberton, North Carolina. But it is a growing segment, and I think it's very cool to see all these guys, like everyone getting involved in sport. Obviously, we've seen this like wave of Samoans and guys from Hawaii that are getting involved, and now to see it happen in the American Southwest, I think is another really cool thing.
Yeah, so Mendoza shouted out fellow Latinos, and then Diego Pavia made a jackass of himself by ripping on Mendoza, yeah. Indiana, the voters. He apologized, so I guess we can take it with a grain of salt, but
yeah, it's not the
best.
I
don't know. It's a bad look, and I think someone's got to talk to him and just calm down, bro.
Yeah, it's what the thing for me when I look at it is I think that it's just, sure, you want to win. We all want to win. Every one of us wants to win. We all want to win all the time. But sometimes you got to handle things with a little space and a little bit of grace and really digest that even though it's not you, it's somebody who does look like you. It's somebody who does come from your kind of the same world, and you got to embrace them.
Yep. Michael Felder's with us at In the Bleachers up on Twitter. He does College Sports Now for Learfield. All right, let's start breaking down the games. And we'll get into some of the issues around college football in a couple of minutes, some of the other issues. Can Oklahoma do it again? Last time, Bama outgained them by a bunch, but turned it over. They gave up a pick six. I think Oklahoma can do it.
I think Alabama is going to make sure it doesn't happen. I think Ty Simpson didn't look very good in that game against Georgia, correct? I don't think he looked very good. I think he's going to be dialed in, locked in, ready to rock and roll. And DeBoer, and now there's no swirls around DeBoer, I guess. Good grief. I guess with the Michigan situation, maybe there are swirls around DeBoer. But I think he's going to be focused up, and I think this team's going to be ready to rock and roll. They got to find that run game that they need. But I think defensively, behind Lawson, they're going to be ready to go.
What do you think of John Mateer going into this game? Can he kind of get back to where he was last year at Wazoo in the beginning of the year at Oklahoma?
Yeah, I think, honestly, I think he's It's good that they didn't play in the SEC championship game. It's good that he's had this extra week. So we have 2 weeks where he's off. And so now he has a chance to get healthy. He should not have come back when he came back, but he did it because he felt like his team needed it. And he is, I think he's going to be able to go out and make plays. I'm looking forward to seeing what this looks like. I just, Mateer, Simpson, watching those guys play, going to be very interesting.
You know, it's funny you mentioned the swirling around Kalen DeBoer, and we're talking to Michael Felder here on ESPN Las Vegas. You know, I tried to warn people that just because Michigan is a great job with a storied history and lots of money and lots of support, coaches aren't leaving good gigs to go into what right now is kind of a mess, and we've seen it settle down here. It might take a little while, and they're going to have to go further down their list because Dillingham ain't leaving Arizona State. You know, we just saw DeBoer commit. Coaches are not walking away from $8 to $12 million deals where they have equity and they feel like, in most cases, that they have the support from the president on down.
Yeah, I really do think that job security and job comfort is super huge and it matters so much. And we're not giving it the credence that it deserves. I mean, you and I have worked in this industry for a long time. And security is better than a paycheck a lot of times, I'll be honest with you. Like, security is better than a paycheck. Like, knowing that I'll be back next year is a good thing. I was actually on the phone with a friend of mine, Nicole Auerbach, and she was like, you're good. It's good that you got out of Chicago when you did, because ultimately the company that I was working for just kind of completely submarine. So security, like, there is strength in security, and I think that that is what coaches are seeing. Kurt Cignetti, obviously. Cignetti signed that huge deal, and he wants to extend it. We're going to see what happens with Matt Campbell when he goes to Penn State. But security is job one.
I'm glad you mentioned Nicole Auerbach because she is a Michigan person, and I kind of wonder how she and some other Michigan people feel. I thought some of them kind of embarrassed themselves the day after the Sherrone Moore stuff with Adam Schefter leading the way. And I would like someone to step up and say, hey, this is what a Michigan man is supposed to be. They thumped their chest about that whole thing.
Right.
It'd be nice if they say, hey, we're embarrassed by what's gone on the last couple of regimes, and this needs to be cleaned up, and we can win football games the right way.
Yeah, I think it's like, this is the way I think about it. I'm not going to sit here and be like your moral compass. That's why I call my mom, because my mom's my moral compass. But what I will say is, you don't get to tell me how hard you work and how hard the job is if you've got the time to do this off the board. Like, I don't, like, I'm being serious. Like, I don't have the time. And I there's this guy on Instagram. I think his name is John or something. But he basically, his wife goes, you've never cheated on me. He's like, yeah, I know. Girls aren't out here giving it away for free. And also, now what do I have to do? I have to have like a second family. I got to have another. I barely want to hear from you. He's like, I barely want to hear from you. You think I want to listen to some other lady talk about this? No. And my wife doesn't like it when I put it that way, but I'm like, babe, I don't have the energy. I don't have the time. I don't have like that. Like, I have drop off in the morning. I have breakfast in the morning, drop off in the morning. Then I have to work, like my actual job, dinner, groceries, all. I'm like, I can't, bro, take something off my plate. Don't put something on it.
Yeah. Hey, what Sherrone Moore was doing was Tiger Woods-esque, which is incredible. Yes, some people exactly. Thrive that way. Not many can. Okay.
Very Tiger Woods-esque. Yeah, great way to put it.
It's crazy. And it all came unraveled. So another one of the CFP games. I keep going back and forth on Miami and Texas A&M. I don't believe in Texas A&M, but I have some doubts about Miami. Who's playing better right now? Who's ready to go? And also, here's the other one. What coach do you trust more?
Well, that's the kernel, right? Like, that's the kernel of this, is which coach do you trust more? And I trust A&M more. I trust them. I trust Mike Elko, right? I trust Mike Elko more than I trust Mario Cristobal. I keep getting Manny Diaz and Mario Cristobal mixed up because, and I'm not trying to be racist, I get them mixed up because I know Manny Diaz was at Miami, but now he's at Duke. So I trust Elko more, and then you throw in Mike Elko was that dude. Now, man, like, there's a whole triangle of situation here. But the thing for me is, I think that Miami is probably playing better right now. I think A&M is served because of the way they play football Cofield, they are served by the idea like they got their bodies healed up a little bit and they play a super physical brand of football. I was talking to Roddy Jones and Roddy said he thought Miami, he said Miami could win it all. And I was like, come on, dude, that can't be real. That can't be real. But he said he thinks they can win it all, especially because of guys like Bane along that defensive, along that front. But for me, I'm just like, man, I think A&M is, I think they're rougher, they're tougher, they're badder. I think they are ready to get after it. So we'll see what happens. For me, I like Miami. Not in love with them, not in love with their – I'm not in love with Carson Beck if we're being – like, that's the reality. I'm not – like, if a quarterback gets his car stolen and no one on his team is like, yeah, we got your back, dog. It's like, yeah, I don't know that I'm in love
with him. You've never liked him. I know you never thought that Georgia followed him, that he's not a football guy. He's not a part of the team guy. He has played well down the stretch. He's got 11 touchdowns and one interceptions. And honestly, like the downside of Marcel Reed and Beck has a downside too, but I think Beck has the possibility to excel and have a big game. And that could be the difference. That said, I literally in a 5-minute conversation can go back and forth every minute on which side I want.
I like Marcel Reed. I think that obviously he makes some mistakes. He plays a little over his skis, but when I watch him play, I see a guy that whole team, they really do get behind. And I think that goes a long way. I was talking to one of my good friends, guys whose wedding I was in, and honestly, he lives a mile away from me. We played at Carolina together, and I was talking to him, and I was talking to his dad, and both of them were just like, "You got to be a part of the team. Like that's a whole thing." And I think Marcel Reed is more of that.
Michael Felder's with us on ESPN Las Vegas, getting ready for the CFP. All right, Ole Miss and Tulane is a rematch, just like Alabama, Oklahoma.
Yep.
It was 45-10 the first time around. Tulane just got blown off the field. They got a lot better as the season went along. And obviously there's big factors here with both head coaches leaving, right. But one is still coaching the game in Sumrall. And I'll tell you what, we talked about it early in the season, this whole thing on Northwestern and Katrina. And like, he loves Tulane. I don't know if that's going to be the difference in making this a close game. What do you think is going to happen? Can Tulane improve so much? And is there a drop off from Lane Kiffin not being there?
I think there's a drop off from Lane Kiffin. I got three things. Three, right? So, one, I think there's a drop-off from Lane not being there. I think that goes without saying. Two, I think that Tulane understands who they are, and Tulane knows that Tulane is in the polar opposite position from Ole Miss, right? Tulane is playing for a coach that they know is leaving, but that coach just gave them a couple $100,000, if I'm not mistaken, for their NIL. So they know he cares about them, but he could not turn this job down. Sometimes you have to go. And then the third one, and I don't know if you saw this, but Golding saying NIL is causing massive problems in college football.
All the exterior factors, in my opinion, of what college football used to use was the NFL. And so you had elite players that wanted to get to NFL because they wanted that payday. Well, they've already got it now. All right, so they've got nice cars. They're in nice condos. Some are living in the country club by me, right? They've already got what you used to have to work hard to, right? They have.
I understand what Pete Golding was trying to say, but in there, that sounded like I'm kind of insulted that these guys live near me. And the first thing I thought of was, well, that sounds like the head coach of Mississippi. I mean, there's a lot of ways people can take that. And I don't know if the players are going to overanalyze it, but, man, I wouldn't be fired up for a coach saying, hey, I don't deserve to get a cut of the pie here.
Right. I don't deserve to live near you. Whoa. That's, you know what that sounds like? You can play football for me, but you can't date my daughter. And I'm going to say that it's very classist. Okay. I'm covering my bases, right? I'm going to say that it's classist. And the idea that the ruling class in terms of coaches, administrators, and then they look at the players as that, you know, the serfs or the proletariats, the plebeians, like you look at them as that. That's a very, like, the idea that you're upset that they make enough money to live near you, that's a problem. Especially when, how do you get to live where you live? Wow. Woo! Interesting. How do I get this house that's at the country club? How do I get this house that's on the golf course? How do I get it? Oh, off their backs. And now I'm upset that they can afford to live there based on NIL. It doesn't sit right with me.
So how close is this game going to be? Can they pull the upset?
I think Tulane can pull the upset, yes. I've said it multiple times. I'm going to say it again when I do College Sports Now. I have a show with Wayne Cook tonight. I think that Tulane can win this football game. I am very excited to see what they're able to bring out. I think that they are playing for something bigger than just themselves, where Ole Miss is like, we've been a story, but we've been a story for the last 2 weeks, but the story has truly been a circus about how completely unhinged everything is. And so I think Tulane has an opportunity.
I know you, Michael Felder, are a gigantic fan of Lanning and the way he brings it in the pregame.
Yes.
Is it just going to be too much for JMU? Who does – you know what? The Dukes do bring a really good dual-threat quarterback who's actually a North Carolina native in Barnett. They have a good running game. I saw Oregon was really complimenting the way they play football. Can they keep it competitive?
I think they can score. So I guess the answer is yes. I think they can score. And if you can score, you have an opportunity. And that's something that we saw out of JMU over the course of especially the back end of the season, they could score points. So we'll see what they can do. If they can find ways to score, then the game's going to be competitive because you're going to have to put the pressure on Oregon to go out and score. I like Burnett, obviously. By the way, shout out to Wayne Knight. For folks that don't know, that is he's from Seinfeld. And the guy that goes, in Jurassic Park. But Wayne Knight, every time they say his name on TV, I'm like, this is the best. This is the best thing. Especially as the father of a daughter who loves Jurassic Park, to the point where she literally has a hat that says, we got dots in here. We got dots in here. Nobody cares. So I'm rooting for them. Obviously, my co-host Stephen Hartzell on College Sports Now with Learfield, he went to JMU, so we're rooting for JMU. But I think Dan Lanning and Dante Moore, they're going to come up with some fire, and they should take care of business. Get them getting stops is going to be the key. If they get some stops early, I think they can bury JMU.
Last minute here, important note: I just wrapped my first Christmas gift earlier today.
Okay,
it was sloppy. I've seen you wrap gifts. You're a professional rapper. I try. Second note, though. Is your top Christmas gift for your wife the lesson you gave her? I saw on itsfelder.substack.com that you talked football with her watching the games. Like, how in-depth did it get?
It got pretty in-depth, man. We talked about zone coverage. And when I talk about zone coverage, I talk about passing things off and making sure that it's a chain of command where you got to know that this guy gets his – we're doing that. And I was like – and then I had an epiphany, if you will, where I was like, oh, it's like when you take your kids to specials. An elementary kid, like when middle school, high school, when those kids go to specials by themselves. But we're in elementary, you take your kid to PE or you take them to music or you take them to art. You have to make sure those kids are all lined up. What you have to do in football, Cofield, you got to make sure they're all lined up. Yeah. And then you have to do a handoff to the specials teacher because you can't just trust them. So you guide them down the hallway. And then you hand them off to the specials teacher. So if you're playing linebacker, right? You're playing Will. You get lined up. Everybody's lined up. Then the slot guy comes out. You have to hand him off to the mic. And then the mic's got to see him into the classroom, if you will. And then the mic's got to pass him off to the Sam or to the strong safety. He's got to pass him off to make sure that everything is taken care of, every box gets checked. And she was like, I never thought about it that way. I would have never thought about it that way. But it worked. And it's like, that's the reality. It's like, you got to hand these guys off to make sure that they are fully – you got to make sure that they're taken care of. If it's a tight end, if it's a slot guy, you have to make sure that they're taken care of so that you know that you can – and then as soon as you hand him off, what do? You're looking for the next guy. You're looking – every kid you put in that classroom, you're looking for the next kid to go into that classroom. It worked perfectly, and she learned a little bit. And I'm proud of myself, but I'm really more proud of her for realizing, like, oh, that makes way more sense.
Well, you have a special relationship because My girlfriend is a Chargers fan, and I'm not really allowed to talk during the Chargers games. But I'll tell you what, at the end of the Chargers-Kansas City game, after they played a really physical Harbaugh-like game and were knocking guys out left and right, the yell that she let out for about 30 seconds, I was like, that was good. That's fun to watch when someone's team finally overcomes their, you know, their evil empire that they can't turn the corner against. That was fun. Football can be fun. Let's all have fun, right?
It can be fun. Trust me. My wife's from Michigan. She's a Detroit Lions fan. And watching them, like, be, like, functional as a team.
Amazing.
She's like, this is crazy. This never happened.
Surreal. Yep, yeah. Surreal. All right, Mike. I'll talk to you next week, man. Thank you.
Sounds good, man. I'm ready to rock and roll next week. I am going to go. I have to go make pizza dough and get pizza ready for tonight because I got a show with Wayne. So I got to talk to Wayne Cook tonight, but I'm telling you, man, I'm going to get this dough started. Let's go.
Love Wayne, middle school teacher in Temecula. All right, buddy, I'll talk to you.
Yep, see you.
There he is, Michael Felder, right here on ESPN Las Vegas. Up next is the Josh Pastner Radio Show live at the Orleans Inside Bailiwick. Thanks to all of our guests today, Justin Watkins, co-host Alex White. Arash Markazi joined us earlier in the day. Of course, Felder, JVT from 1230, V's in the game, and Miles Simmons from Pro Football Talk. That'll do it for Cofield and Company. Josh Pastner Radio Show is on the way.